Hi, I'm Catherine Galligan, and I believe that love is the most important thing, not only in the world, but in the whole universe. I created the Love to You All podcast as a platform to offer the wisdom and inspiration necessary for us to create a world where love is the guiding force. Together, we can release the protective barriers that keep us from giving, receiving, and fully embodying love. Join me and my guests as we explore the many ways to be the love for our world longing for change, peace, and hope. I believe it's my soul's mission to inspire the courage you need to be the most loving frequency you came here to be in this lifetime. I'm so glad you're here because we have got a world to change. Hello, and welcome back to Love to You All. I am Catherine Galligan, the host of this podcast, and in this episode, which by the way is episode number 7, and I'm very excited about that particular number because somebody told me before I got started that most podcasts don't make it to the 7th episode, so I'm very pleased to hit this early milestone, but all of that aside, more importantly, I am extremely honored and privileged to introduce the two lovely people joining me today for an incredible conversation, Michelle and Jared Turner. And I've actually known these two for quite a while, but there was an almost 10-year gap from when I first became acquainted with them to this present day. And it was the yoga and spiritual community that brought us together the first time. But now I would chalk it up to good old-fashioned serendipity. You know, who knew at the time when we first met that I would eventually be hosting a podcast where we could talk about this powerful healing modality that we are going to address today that I believe is and will continue to become a pretty important player in the world of personal healing. And naturally, this supports my mission of generating more love in our world, because I think the more personal healing we do, the more available it makes us for love. So just to give you a little snapshot of who you'll be listening to, let's start with Michelle. She has a background in health and wellness. She focused on nutrition. She was a yoga teacher. She's a death doula and so many other things. I mean, this woman is very impressive. And then meanwhile, Jared, her husband, is a retired firefighter, but he had this kind of separate life as a man leading kirtan, you know, kirtan groups. And he also was well known as a Vedic astrologer. In fact, I think most people in our community would have known him by his spiritual name, which is Rudradas, which by the way, his name means bliss of transformation. And I can't think of a more perfect name for what he does now. But needless to say, the two of them have been longtime pillars of our local spiritual community. They are living examples and facilitators of self-awareness, just raising individual and collective consciousness. And they absolutely stand for love, which I know, you know, is important to me. So Michelle and Jared, they're married, and interestingly, their career paths have guided them toward working together. And now they provide personal transformation retreats. And just to be crystal clear, what they are doing in these retreats is they are psychedelic facilitators, and they provide this for individuals, but also for very small groups. And so I invited them on this show to help shed light on this topic because, you know, first, look, here's how I feel about it. If we want to be more love in this world, it is quite possible that we need to start with ourselves, right? And so I know that I have needed to start with myself. And the more personal healing that I do, that we do, the more available it makes us for that very thing that I'm going for, love. And so these led psychedelic experiences by trained facilitators is just one option to getting there. So I'm not saying it's the only one. I'm just saying that it's out there. I consider it to be very effective. Okay. What I've found, though, is even though it's becoming more mainstream, my observation is that a lot of people, they're curious about it, but they're terrified of it. And plant medicines in general, they carry a stigma, you know, as being naughty or wrong or dangerous or addictive. And I really want to put that to bed, because the outcome of these things is so incredibly powerful for our benefit, for our collective benefit. I really don't think we need to be turning a blind eye or kind of, I don't know, having a judgment about that. How about that? So now that it has found its way into a more mainstream offering, and I think it's doing that because its healing effects, they're just undeniable. There's study after study after study being performed by legitimate and respectable institutions, you know, proving their efficacy and their relevance to improving mental health. And I personally have done some journeys with a shaman, and it's made a huge difference in my life. Like, sometimes I wonder how much more loving and compassionate can I become? And of course, there's more for me, but I know that those experiences made a contribution on that front personally. So a lot of the research that you'll find out there, it's been done around people who suffer PTSD or some type of trauma, maybe dealing with major illness or making peace with death. But what I want to make clear today is that these experiences have a place for anyone. So PTSD or not, to experience this is going to improve your life. And I can't recommend a couple like the Turners, so Michelle and Jared, who you're about to meet, with this process. I've worked with some shamans, and I have to say, I don't know that they could hold a candle to this couple who treats the process with so much integrity and reverence, and they treat all of their prospective clients with that same level of like high standard. It's really impressive. And I think that after you listen to them, you're going to have a lot more peace about maybe considering trying this or feel a little closer to pulling the trigger. But I just think it's so beautiful, because you're going to see for yourself, these were two pretty conservative people who came into this line of work more as a calling, you know, more as an answering to their personal dharmas. And the fact that they both found themselves there at the same time is so incredibly poetic and aligned in my mind. You know, I know this is meant to be. So you're going to get to hear how they found themselves where they are now, the types of transformations they've seen happen with their clients, how their process works. And I truly hope that by the end of this, you have a lot more peace about this whole, you know, taboo topic. You may even want to take the next step. And so just settle in, because we're going to cover a lot of ground in this conversation. And the last thing that I want to say is this: if your curiosity becomes so piqued after listening to them, and you know, you have all this trust, you might want to connect with them, in which case I'm going to encourage you to email me. And so my email address will be in the show notes, and please don't hesitate to do that, because I am trying to promote as much love as possible in this world, and this is just one way to get there. So without further ado, I am so excited to present Michelle and Jared Turner. Hello, Michelle and Jared Turner. Welcome to Love to You All.
Hello. Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
Yes, you're so welcome. I'm delighted that you're here. And I've been wanting to have you on this show. We've been working on this for a little bit. And because I'm fascinated by what you do, and I have a theory that what you're doing is a really key component to generating more love in this world, and kind of starting like one individual at a time, you know. We have this yoga connection that goes back, I think at least, well, more than 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And so, Michelle, I know that you, like, the way that I first knew you was with laughter yoga.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yes. And then, and health and nutrition. Uh-huh. Like, I mean, you've just been about self-betterment, self-development. Yep. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then Jared read my Vedic astrology chart 10 or 11 years ago. And I was obsessed with that too. And so that's how I first knew you guys. And I just think the world really wanted us to be together, you know? Yeah. Like, somehow I found my way back to you, which I love. Yes. And we've all evolved since then. Mm-hmm. We're not all quite doing exactly the same thing. So now, these days, you're doing personal transformations by way of psychedelic facilitation. Mm-hmm. Have I got that right?
You do. Right. Yes.
Okay. This is a hot topic. This used to be kind of confined to a certain sort of sub world, if you will. And I'm so grateful to see it becoming a little bit more mainstream and with people, you know, just having more awareness about it. And so this is the main reason why I wanted to have you on this show. I just want you to tell us all about it. How did you get started? Why are you doing this? You know, what are you experiencing? Go.
Well, I guess we can start by telling how we got into this, because we did not seek this out. We were kind of your average nerds. We had never ever experienced psychedelics in our life, and we were into health and wellness.
And
you know, it for us, it kind of started coming into our awareness with him being in the fire service, and I'll let him talk a little bit more about that. But over the course of several years, it was something that, you know, we kept trying to turn away from. And it was almost like it kept hitting us in the head. It's like, no, right here. And I just remember like thinking, no, I don't do drugs. You know, that was kind of my feeling, which is kind of the stigma that a lot of people have surrounding these substances. But being the, you know, super curious person that I am, you know, I just started to look into the possibilities. You know, it almost seemed too good to be true. And I am an avid reader and researcher, and I was just fascinated with all these universities that were doing these studies. And, you know, I started finding studies on these medicines and how they could, you know, like one of the studies that I remember seeing, I think it's from 2018. It was Robin Carhart-Harris from the Imperial College of London. And the title of the study was Increased Nature Relatedness and Decreased Authoritarianism, Political Views After Psilocybin for Treatment-Resistant Depression. And I'm like, what?
Wow.
Yes. And I was just fascinated, because what they found was after 12 months of having a psilocybin journey, people still were in that same place with less authoritarianism views, more liberal political, you know, views, and the control subjects, there was no difference. And I was just fascinated by this. Like, how could it change something so fundamental to a person's being? And then there was a movie that came out in about 2018 called Trip of Compassion. And it was from the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. And what they did was they did a study, and you can find the movie on Vimeo, and I invite you to do so because it's fascinating. They took...
Is it on Netflix too? Or just like...
It's on Netflix. I know we had to buy it on Vimeo because it's kind of an obscure movie, and you're actually seeing these participants in their MDMA journey. And they used MDMA with people who had trauma. You know, there were 10 participants, but the movie highlights 3. Okay. And just the vast difference. And one of the guys' final revelation at the end was, he said, my whole life, all I wanted to be was to be loved. And then I realized all I needed to do was love. And it was so beautiful, and they even took Israelis and Palestinians and had them come together. So it's like, you know, when you see all of this, it's just like, wow, you know, like you were saying, like, how could this contribute to more love in the world? And, you know, peace requires mastering conflict, and conflict or violence on the outside always is reflective of conflict or violence on the inside. And if we can really work with that within ourselves, like, we really can change the world. And so that's how I, you know,
so that's how you became willing, because
that's how I became willing.
You were a card-carrying nerd
before. Card-carrying nerd. And then and then at that point, you know, Jared would bring things up to me as far as, you know, being the fire service. And like I said, I'll let him tell that story. But I started getting all these emails from places that were in 2020 during COVID opening up facilitator training. This had never happened before. There never was such a thing.
Right. It didn't exist.
It didn't exist. But a lot of these places that had been offering retreats had to shut down because of COVID. And so now they're like, well, how do we stay alive? Let's offer facilitator training.
That
and so
sense.
I'm sharing with him one day that, oh, this place called the Synthesis Institute out of the Netherlands is doing their very first psychedelic facilitator training. And he said, well, you should apply. And I said, oh, I don't qualify. It's like medical doctors, psychotherapists, you know, people with advanced degrees. And he's like, I don't know, apply anyway.
See what happens.
Yeah, see what happens. And the only reason I did was because we happened to be, it was Black Friday, and we were stuck at a shop where he was getting some work done on his truck. And I was sitting in the parking lot just wasting hours
just
of time.
Pulling time.
Yeah. And so that's the only reason I did it, right? You what?
That's super.
It's like really kind of blows my mind sometimes. And I submitted it and it cost me several hundred dollars to submit an application. And I thought, this is so foolish. I can't even believe I'm doing this. And that was Black Friday. And that Monday they said, we'd like to set up a Zoom interview with you. And I thought, oh, well, they're gonna realize in the interview that I'm not qualified. So I kept kind of trying to think I just wasn't. This
You're
wasn't
finding reasons not to answer your calling.
Exactly. And so we have the interview and I'm telling her, but you need to know, I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not a psychotherapist, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she just kept asking questions and we had this lovely conversation and I told her, and I, you need to know, I've never done a psychedelic before. I've never even like smoked weed, you know?
That's impressive. Good job.
I know. I was such a nerd. And then, you know, at the end, she's like, well, you know, I think you're exactly what we're looking for.
Wow.
And
so
I was
she had a super open mind, too.
Yeah, she was great. And so I hung up the Zoom call and I said, now, how do we pay for it?
This is on Black Friday, right?
Well, it was during COVID and then we got these stimulus checks and I'm like, this is like like you said, serendipitous, like something else is happening here. And one of the things, you know, I've heard said over and over that I kind of giggle about is people say, you don't seek out the mushrooms seek out you. And when they're willing to work with you, they're going to find you. And I always thought that was kind of woo woo, but I'm like, okay, I see that happening. So okay. I'll let Jared tell his story because it's even more fascinating than that.
Yeah, thanks. So I guess for me, I don't self-subscribe as a nerd.
Psychedelics. Let's not categorize you that way.
Okay. nerdy in a lot of ways, I suppose, if I'm being honest. But so my journey is slightly different. You know, I grew up second generation preacher's kid. I grew up in a really, really fundamentalist household. And I just had questions early on about religion and some of it just didn't resonate with me. And I had questions that adults couldn't answer. I was one of those kind of kids that just was always asking why, you know? And so I started, like, I had a pretty good awareness as a child. I can remember one moment driving home from school and this like thought just spontaneously arose in my mind. And I was like, so my life, I'm supposed to go to school, go to college, get married, have kids, and then I die. And I'm about 6 or 7 years old. And I'm like, there's got to be more to this there's got to be more to this whole, you know, beautiful reality and mechanism. Like, there has to be a deeper reason for that. And so, you know, that was really a driving force for me. And most of my life is really to discover, you know, meaning and purpose. And yeah, it's difficult when you, and many people have that awareness dawn at an early age. And anyway, it sets you up for a lifetime of seeking, which is what really, happened to me. And so during that process, I began to have, you know, very heart-opening experiences. And then in 2003, in a breathing class, I had what Maslow would call, you know, a peak or transpersonal experience that I didn't understand. And so just kept journeying, kept learning, kept connecting, kept researching and exploring different religions of the world and different paths and trying to make sense of the understanding that I was having. I left that, you know, the religious dogma of the church as a teenager, like a lot of people do, and really became an abject atheist at that point, you know, before I had this spiritual experience. And I didn't know what to do with it because I had decided that it was all BS and all made up anyway, and there's no really reality to any kind of spirituality. So I had kind of painted myself, you know, metaphorically into a corner, because now I didn't have any resources to help map what I was experiencing. So rock along a few years, and somebody handed me a CD in about 2006 of kirtan music. And I put that CD in and I started listening to it, and it was an American singing kirtan, and I just was so moved, you know, like all of those memories of growing up in a full gospel church, singing and dancing and, you know, to God. And I just realized, like, they're all singing to the same thing, like that one truth, you know, and it was such a heart-opening moment. And so I began, like a little child, to try to learn these mantras and try to repeat them. And then I started offering a little Monday night kirtan here in North Texas, and like two people came, you know, for a long time, and then it slowly grew. And so that was a real healing time for me, just being up there chanting with people, connecting with people, but more importantly, watching people come in with eyes wide open, not knowing what they're singing. They don't know the rules. They don't know anything about it. And all of a sudden, just tears would start streaming down their face. And they didn't know why. And to see people light up, maybe for the first time in years, always moved me so deeply. And so I thought, in my own struggles and journey, how can I facilitate other people to have that awakening moment on some level, you know, and really connect back in with themselves, which is the whole point. And that leads me to coming forward to the psychedelic piece, which is a big forward, but coming back to the psychedelic piece, is really, there are at least once in a client's journey where Michelle will look and I will look at each other from across the room, and our eyes will be just full of tears because this person, who has no idea about Vedanta or, you know, technical Hindu philosophy, and they're spouting the most beautiful non-dual truth that you've ever heard, and they're experiencing it in real time and healing, you know, some deep, deep wounds. And so, you know, I think that whole journey has led us, but from my perspective, from that, just facilitating and just holding the space for people to really connect deeply with themselves. And sometimes for the first time, at least, you know, since childhood, a lot of times, you know, because we put up so many barriers to our own heart because of past hurts and insecurities, and sometimes programming, sometimes, you know, what the yogis call samskaras or impressions from our DNA lineage or wherever these things come from. But to offer people a space to come in 3 or 4 hours, they're connecting with themselves, sometimes for the first time in their body. We're just so moving to us and so rewarding. And so how, to me, how that contributes really to more love in the world is encouraging self-love.
Yes.
Through this process, encouraging and offering space for people to get back in touch with their own heart, their own sense of self, breaking down those barriers, which leads to acceptance of themselves and love and peace in their own heart, which is the only way we're going to transform what we're seeing in the world. We have to do it individually first.
Okay, that brings me to a very important question. The three of us have all done a lot of self-work just individually over the years. And you know, what people will say to me is the journey's never over. Mm-hmm. Now I have a really specific goal of seeing world peace happen before I die, Michelle and Jared. And so how's that going to, you know, if I still have to fix myself until the day I die, then how is that going to work? Is it, can it work in my timing? That's what I want to know. I'm teasing, you know, I'd love to hear what you'd have to say about that.
Okay. So what's coming up for me is, you know, it's more about the journey than the destination.
Yeah.
So as long as you're striving for peace in the world and peace in those around you, keep doing that 100%, you know, and just like in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna teaches Arjuna, let go of the fruits of action and just do your dharma. Just do it. Yeah. Work for world peace. Go crazy with it because we need it.
Okay. And so for you, like, you really feel like the kirtan experience, just kind of witnessing that human, that opening of the heart, that really prepared you to hold an even more sacred container for people, you know, in the future.
It did. And I think that's one thing that I'm so happy to have a partner on this path together. And I think one of the things that is unique about what we offer to people is to have that masculine and feminine presence present. And we always stack the deck, like in all ways, in our clients' best interest and energetically for them. And, you know, to use a metaphor, you know, Michelle is right there with them, like the Divine Mother. I'm sitting at their feet, holding the space, keeping people safe. You know, I'm was a firefighter, retired, and a paramedic. So I bring that medical piece, you know, and that makes people feel safe. And so that energetic, I think, presence that we both bring is, they're both vitally important. And
so I want to ask about the firefighter piece, because Michelle explained how mushrooms kept finding her. How in the firefighter setting did they find you? What did you mean by that?
Well, that's a great question. So in about 2017, I knew I was getting to the end of my career.
It ran its course.
It had run its course. And I looked around and I saw so much suffering in my fellow firefighters, male and female. And just seeing the suffering, and, you know, it expressed itself through anger, addiction, toxic environment. Like, we all witness these things. And it's just a little bit more, I would say, exacerbated in the fire service, because it's moral injury after moral injury every time, you know, the tones go off in the station to go on another call. And so when you have that constant, you know, re-injury and that PTSD and looking around, and then, you know, like I said earlier, at the suffering, but in particular, in 1 year, I lost three fellow firefighters. One was due to addiction. He actually broke his foot on a fire, actually rescuing somebody, became addicted to pain medication as a result of those injuries. And it eventually cost him his career, his family, and eventually his life. And so right after that, we had a young firefighter that had only been on the job maybe about 5 years, committed suicide. And then right after that, we had another senior firefighter that was well-loved and respected that died instantly in an accident. And I was just witnessing so much grief, but there was no way to express it. And everybody was just eating their own grief. And yeah. it was just a really heavy time. And so that's when I was really scratching my head and going, you know, I can't come lead Kirtan at the fire station. They would kick me out of here. But right. What is there a mechanism? Is there something that could, and that's when I started researching. And so this is about 2018. Okay. And I became aware of the MAPS group and what they were doing yeah. with veterans and yeah. and psychedelic assisted therapy, particularly at that time, microdosing of mushrooms was mm-hmm. was the new thing bubbling up. And right. so, you know, if your listeners haven't already figured it out, Michelle is the clinician and I'm the ceremony guy. And that, okay. that and that's how our, that's what we bring to this, to our team. But I knew I had to bring the research to her, you know, to get her approval to try this microdosing because it was a big risk. You know, I was employed by a governmental organization and it was not accepted. So sat with it for a long time, meditated with it, prayed about it. We did the research and then decided to try it. And Michelle could probably tell the story better than me. But every day when I would come home from the fire station in the morning, she would say, you know, how was your shift? And I almost always, they, you know, had all these calls and this, yeah. you know, this person was all mad and this happened and this stupid chief. I mean, it was just, that was the tape running, right?
Yeah.
And then yeah. one day after, not long after I actually started microdosing, I came home. I wasn't aware of it, but I was whistling when I walked in the door and she's like, well, how was your day? And I go, you know, it was a pretty good day. And wow. she was like stunned. Mm-hmm. She was like, that's unbelievable. And I wasn't conscious of it. And I'm like, wow, that really is something. And so that for us was a breakthrough moment. And then just quickly leading up to how I got immersed in this field, you know, professionally, was I got found out about the time she found out about the Synthesis Institute, Naropa University in Boulder. They had started yeah. a psychedelic assisted therapy program. And it was yes, their inaugural cohort, and they partnered with MAPS to do an MDMA assisted therapy program.
Yes. It's Naropa with an N.
That's yeah. right. That's
yes.
right.
Yes.
Naropa. And so she applied. I decided, well, I'm going to apply too, even though I'm not qualified. And actually, right off the bat, I was rejected. They were like, you know, we're looking for therapists and medical doctors. And I was like, okay, I don't care, whatever. Yeah. You know, I just thought I'd try.
But she, long shot anyway. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
she got in, and I was like, oh, that's a bummer. Well, about 2 days later, I got another email from the chair of the program saying, look, I reviewed your file, and I would like to offer you a spot in our program too.
Wow. And so
that was very transformational. And then that led me into actually enrolling, and I'm about to graduate from Naropa with my Master of Divinity degree. And I'm writing my thesis on psychedelic chaplaincy.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
The accomplishment. This is why we were putting you in a nerd category. It's those like the scholarly pursuits that
sure.
is like tireless on your part. Like you're constantly and learning and really going deep in subjects. It's very admirable.
I think we're both of us are definitely lifelong learners.
Yeah. Yes. Well, we're glad you are. So, okay. So when you microdosed and you're still working at the fire department, you know, I have to say, I've always wondered this about you. Was it like you leave your house, you know, drive there, get there, put on like click into gear, like, okay, I'm a different personality now because I'm in a totally different setting from mm-hmm. what the whole rest of my life is like?
Yeah.
I mean, was that hard for you to do?
Very difficult. It was very okay. difficult. It caused me a lot of suffering.
Okay.
And I can remember the moment when I was leading Kirtan and doing Vedic astrology and traveling to India and doing all those things, I was given the spiritual name Rudradas, which means bliss of transformation.
That's perfect.
Is what that name means. I was given that by my Kirtan teacher. And it's the same lineage as Bhagavan Das and Krishna Das and those guys. And yep. so I had this life being Rudradas and being the Kirtan guy and the astrologer and living my authentic self, but I would have to bury that, put on my armor and go to work. Like a lot of people do, you know,
right.
A lot of people don't have the opportunity, but I would find ways. If people would ask me questions, you know, I would mm-hmm. share openly, because again, I saw so much suffering. And so the right people would seek me out and like catch me in the locker room and say, hey, I want to learn about Zen Buddhism, or, and I would mm-hmm. give them some words of encouragement or what I knew about that. And we'd talk about it. So people would find me over the years, but I can tell you, it's actually a really funny story. I was in a group of firefighters. We were standing around, and apparently somebody had put up a YouTube video, and it had been found by one of the firefighters and circulated throughout the fire department. So I'm standing there, and this big booming voice behind me says, "Hey, Rudra." And I almost had like a panic attack. Like, that feeling came over me of, oh my God, I'm totally outed, you know?
And yeah, I'm about to be persecuted.
Totally. And I was so terrified of that moment for so many years. And you know what happened? Nothing.
Nothing. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just like, well, we knew he was weird. It's okay. Whatever. But I had wasted so much time and energy trying to keep those two lives apart. It was really a tremendous waste of time. So if somebody's out there listening to me, learn from my mistake, just be your authentic self. Life is short and people aren't that important. Just live your life.
Okay. Amen. Thank you. We can all go home now. Like authenticity has been my word for a while now. I'm how about 6 months, maybe mm-hmm. longer, but it dawned on me because, you know, I have a little bit of understanding about the energy and vibration and things like this. And, you know, there are certain words that carry a certain vibration and certain feelings and emotions that carry a vibration. And I used to think that love was the be all end all. Hey, if we're just, you know, be love, it's not even like do something loving. It's just like be the essence of love. You're at the highest vibration. You got it. That's all you mm-hmm. got to do. And mm-hmm. really, it's being authentic.
Yeah.
To me, it's like that's the most loving thing that we can do for ourselves.
Exactly.
Is to be authentic. And, you know, to your point, I owned a yoga studio for a number of years, really thinking like, this is my platform. I'm almost like probably in an egotistical way, considered myself like, you know, spreading a good word, you know, and like I would have these like little mat chats before a class started about, you know, but whatever yoga philosophy I felt like, you know, might pertain to modern living. And I even then I was so guarded and careful mm-hmm. because for all the people that I knew were in the room that they were afraid of doing yoga because it was against their religion, I was real careful to like, well, I don't want to say anything that upsets them or tips them off, or like that's the straw that breaks the camel's back. And then they're not going to practice here anymore because it got too weird for them, or yeah. better said, I got too real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that took some time.
Mm-hmm.
And now here we are. Mm-hmm. So
here we are.
Because I feel like the work that you're doing is helping people achieve that. Mm-hmm. And so tell me a little bit more about, you know, why are people coming to you when they do find you? Are you seeing themes? You know, are you seeing like, what are you helping them with? And like, what's their journey like?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because we tend to attract people like ourselves, you know, who are, most of them have never tried plant medicines before. They've never done a retreat with breath work before. And we go really deep into, you know, the psyche when we do prep with a new client. And, you know, even before that, even backing up a little bit more, you know, there's a lot of people that just have no idea what this is about. They think, oh, you know, do I just get high and then I'm a new person?
They think they're going to see paisley rainbows and have a good time.
Yeah, that doesn't always happen. And I'll be honest, like the actual ceremony is such a tiny piece of the work we do with clients.
Right.
And right. So we've had people say, well, I'm in town. I want to come this Saturday. And we're just like, I don't think you have any idea. We're not the people for you, because working with us there's a very clinical medical procedure first of screening. You know, we have to make sure that, number one, psychologically, are you okay to even do breath work? Because to be honest, even breath work could destabilize someone who's in a particularly vulnerable place. And, you know, and then we look at family history, we look at, you know, and we have a screener who is a psychopharmacologist who this is exactly what he does. So
you outsource that part of it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. That has to be approved before we ever move forward with anybody. And I would say, what do you think? 40 or 50% get approved.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like maybe half. Okay.
Yeah. Maybe even a little less than half. And it's not always because of, you know, something, just a blaring contraindication. It could be something as simple as, you know, oh, my husband and I are in the process of opening a new business right now. Well, then you're probably not going to have time for prep and integration and all that goes along with being tender with yourself and, you know, the self-work that you need to do alongside of preparing for a ceremony.
So how long is the preparation before? Because the ceremony is what? It's just a few hours.
So the first step we go through is the screening process. And I would say the average person, it takes about 2 weeks. You know, we'll do a discovery call. We'll talk about what they're looking for. We'll kind of give an idea of what it looks like working with us. And then they fill out the screening form and we wait to hear back. And if any changes need to be made, you know, is there something that needs to change first before they're approved? Or is it a clear contraindication? No, you have a history of psychosis. We can't move forward ever, you know, or something like that. And then once that happens, we can move forward into preparation. And we like to do a pretty ceremonial dieta. And dieta is basically the preparation time. And that's what they call it if you would go to South America to do ayahuasca. It's called a dieta. And a dieta in a traditional indigenous culture could be up to a year long. So for us, the absolute minimum we do is 4 weeks. We prefer that it be more like 6 weeks. And then along with the client, we come up with what is that, you could call it a sadhana, what is that practice going to look like? What is that dieta going to look like for the next 4 to 6 weeks or longer? Some people prefer to take longer.
This episode is brought to you by my brand new online membership for women called Emerge. Inspired by the Year of the Snake, Emerge is a very special container for women ready to become not only bigger, expanded versions of themselves, but also the highest frequency you came here to be in this lifetime. If you're ready to live a little bit more out loud and step into your power, Emerge is for you. It is a year-long commitment where every month, like-minded women gather together to become even more powerful. It includes a masterclass, lots of learning, and lots of support. I'm your mentor, and I cannot wait to get started because we're going to have an incredible year together. You can find more information to register linked in the show notes. Until then, I can't wait to see you become part of Emerge.
Together, we go over like, what could that look like? Because one of the most important things is that you create some sort of reciprocity with these plants. How are you going to show your reverence over the next 4 to 6 weeks for what these plants are going to offer you, right? What is your offering? Are you going to give something up? Are you going to take on a practice? And we do, during that process of prep, we go very deep into family of origin, you know, and kind of try to look for things that might be something that they really need to look at or want to look at or wish to not bring into the future. And we do tell everybody, you know, we are not therapists. We encourage that everybody have a therapist. And I would say most of our clients do have therapists, and that's great. Therapists will work with all that stuff that, you know, you bring to this life. But we will go into family of origin because we want to know, like as they navigate a ceremony, as coaches, we're future focused. So how do we take what comes up now? And we need to be familiar with what could come up. And how do we future focus that? How do we look at what life is going to look like post-ceremony as we work in integration? So it's, you know, we do have a lot of clients who, when we go through the prep, it's hard. It's hard work. It's heavy lifting. It can be triggering, you know, and we have had clients reach out and say, you know, I can't answer these questions. Could you do it with me? And we'll log into Zoom and we'll go through it with them because it's just so, you know, maybe they haven't thought of these things since they were little.
Right. Well, this sounds extremely thorough.
So again, working on my thesis, and I hope it'll already be turned in by the time your listener hears this. But as part of my research and delving so deeply into what we do, I've created, you know, kind of a correlation between the three prep, ceremony, three integration to the seven chakras that are kind of in the zeitgeist of you know, Western culture. And really getting into first chakra is, you know, security and earth element, all those things. And then that's what we go into, like she's talking about your family origin, you know, what was painful, what was allowed in your childhood, what wasn't, you know. And again, it's challenging for some people. And then, you know, in the second, what is that creative flow? What are those blocks to your creative flow? Either, you know, sexually, artistically, all of those things. That's all creation, you know? And so we get people grounding in bare feet on the earth sometimes, creating art, conscious movement, you know, and then moving into their own sense of power. And then in the third, and then the fourth is the ceremony day. This is the heart opening. This is the celebration, you know? And then we move into the, you know, now we move into our sense of self in the throat and expressing those things. And then, you know, bringing that wisdom finally and integrating the wisdom that you got from the ceremony into your body, into your experience, so that it manifests itself into your life. Not just another experience, but you're able to actually reflect and say, wow, I used to be terrified of driving on the freeway or, you know, something. And look at me. I came home whistling today, you know. And so
you literally did.
I literally did. So, you know, these maps of consciousness has been laid out for millennia. And this is just one way that we kind of plug into that wisdom as a guidance system for us. And as I said at the outset, we're really seeing people create miracles for themselves. You know, it's them and the medicine. We're just providing the opportunity in the space.
And there's a tremendous amount of education as well, because a lot of times people don't understand what is happening inside their body.
Like, what's happening up there?
Yes. So there's some really, really amazing research happening right now. Gul Dolan, she has a lab at Johns Hopkins. She's also part of Berkeley. And she's been doing some research that has proven. So we all have critical learning periods when we are very small. And it's usually from birth to about 7 years old. That's called a critical learning period. Our brains are really neuroplastic. And things that we pick up before age seven, we tend to learn very quickly, right?
Okay.
And you've probably heard that, you know, where they say that children that are traumatized before age seven, it becomes a part of their personality. And it's very hard to change that, you know? So they call that like complex trauma because it happened in their family of origin before age seven.
Like it's a done deal, too bad.
It's a done deal, right?
Yeah.
So now the work that she's doing at her lab, she's proving that these psychedelics, MDMA, psilocybin, LSD, ayahuasca, ibogaine, all of these psychedelics reopen those critical periods after a high dose journey, which is, you know, like a therapeutic to heroic, somewhere in that range. They reopen. It really depends if you're talking about dried mushrooms, if you're talking about, you know, whatever substance you're talking about. But a therapeutic range is a range that, you know, really cracks someone open without spiritually bypassing into the stratosphere. Like we don't want to blow people into dissociation, right?
Right,
you want to
right.
stay in a therapeutic range where they're still, you know, they're cracked open, but they're still present. They're still able to do the work, right? Which is that's the perfect space. You don't want to give someone a heroic dose and blow them away into another universe and have them come back destabilized. You know, that's not the goal. So anywhere in that range, that therapeutic range, opens the or higher, opens these critical periods for 2 weeks after a journey. And okay. you can extend that up to 4 weeks with microdosing. So this is like,
okay.
it changes the playing field.
Yes.
So this is why it's so important that people that choose to work with these medicines have a trained facilitator or guide. Because one thing you have to understand is when you reopen these critical periods, your brain is very neuroplastic and you can create new patterns and new behaviors, right? But neuroplasticity is neutral. So if you don't have someone guiding you in that right direction, you could grab a cigarette the next day and all of a sudden you took up smoking, right? I mean, that's kind of a, you know, I'm going a little overboard there, but we can also, the point is neuroplasticity is neutral. We can create negative behaviors as well.
As easily as we can create positive.
Exactly. Mind. So it's really important to have someone kind of holding your hand through integration afterwards and knowing what was your intention going into this ceremony and how are we as facilitators going to help you support that when you come out the other side and you're in this place where you can, you know, create things in your life that maybe, you know, you thought would never be created, you know?
The other advantage of having facilitators is that initial integration meeting happens 24 hours after the ceremony. Mm-hmm. And people are often surprised how tender and vulnerable they feel.
Yes.
You know, I mean, we coach people up and we get them ready for that. But a lot of times they just want to stay in bed, have a cup of tea, be silent, you know, and some people for the first time in their life, and it's that neuroplastic space is kind of, it's a rebirth. Mm-hmm. It's really tender. So to have people that were with you in the ceremony, because at 24 hours, maybe some of the memories or some of the realizations are already fading, but we were there, we were sober, and we can help process some of those things later. We don't do processing in real time. Their experience is their experience. But
then have their experience.
That's right.
Are you taking notes while you are?
Yeah, I always ask permission, during the ceremony, would you like me to take notes in case there's something you want to reflect back on later? And everybody is always like, yes. I've never had anyone say no. But some people are completely silent and never say a word. Some people never move. Some people move a lot.
What?
It's a very somatic for them. Some people never stop talking. We've had people that laugh for hours. Mm-hmm. Hours, and it's just delightful. We've had people that cry.
Oh,
yeah, it's really and
so you knew that would be, that could be a reaction from your training, that you might have a client that just sits
That's
there
right.
in silence. I would go out of my mind.
So I'll tell you about one, and this was in one of the other states where this is, you know, legal. I was holding space and we went into ceremony at 8:30 in the morning. And at 5 o'clock, this person still hadn't even moved. I mean, I was like literally looking at this person's chest. Like I knew they were alive, but I was like, what?
Wow.
And then we have people who 40 minutes in are like, oh my God, I is it the next day? I feel like I've been here 15 hours. Is it time to go home? And we're like, yeah, haven't even dropped in yet.
The time distortion is real. And we've also had people, interestingly, that, you know, as the medicine's taken effect, we had a client who was like looking at her hands going, it's so weird to be in a body. She just kept saying that. Like, it feels so weird to be in a body. And then later afterwards, when we were kind of processing that, she was kind of looping that of how strange it felt to be in a body. And so I was, you know, we just approach everything with curiosity. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, I'm curious, when was the last time you felt like you were really in your body? And she sat there for a while and she said, I think when I was about 7 years old was the last time I was really in my body. And that's why it felt weird, you know? So you never know how these medicines are billions of years old, and there's a wisdom and intelligence there, you know, specifically with psilocybin, which is what we tend to work with the most, because it is gentle and it is healing. But this wisdom and this healing intelligence, you know, these compounds just marry perfectly with our brain chemistry, and there's really something amazing that can happen. But we'd never know how it's going to express itself. And like Michelle said, we've had people, you know, cry until they start laughing and then laugh till they start crying. And it just kind of starts all over again. And it's all beautiful and perfect. And we're just here to witness all of it and keep them safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's so, it's remarkable. It's remarkable that you can hold space for that many hours just with, you know, I mean, a pretty large level of unpredictability.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I would imagine people have intentions when they go into this thing.
They do.
Okay, I want to heal this thing about me and my mom.
We want people to really, you know, get clear on why are they here? Why are they doing this work?
Yeah.
But I can tell you that regardless of your intention, the medicine's going to give you what the medicine wants to give you.
That's right.
Okay.
So, you know, and that what you just said, you know, we've had people that right before they put on the eye mask and lie down, they say, just so you know, I'm not going into my mom's stuff. And
okay.
30 minutes later,
they just shrug.
They're right in there with their mom's stuff, right?
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, the day is such a ceremony. Like, what we create together, we call in the directions before they ever arrive. It's very ceremonial, you know, and then we have a mesa, we have an altar. They have, from the beginning of their dieta, they've been trying to figure out, like, what do I want my altar to look like?
Okay.
And they put that together when they arrive. And then before we ever get into, you know, ceremony, we start with an hour of breath work, because breath work kind of prepares the nervous system to drop into non-ordinary states.
Okay.
So, you know, it really, like he said, it stacks the deck in our favor a little bit so that, you know, the breath work can kind of calm that nervous system and bring it back to a place of balance.
Is it a yogic breath or like something I would recognize? Or?
It's kind of based on a model of like Stan Grof's holotropic breath work Leonard Orr's rebirthing process.
Yes.
But they're laying, you know, they're down on the ground. We're standing, but we're breathing with them and coaching them kind of in an ebb and flow of the breath. And even we've had clients say, just to come and do the breath work was worth the price of admission.
We've had clients ask if they can come back just for that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And just so you know, we curate the playlists for these things too. Like we work with them for the, you know, course of the dieta to find out what music is pleasant, what music do they have an aversion to, what might be triggering for them. And then we put together the playlist, because in this work, music is considered the hidden therapist. And the music can really create some magic in that space as well. We've had people say things like, I'm not hearing the music. The music is coming from inside of me.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, it's really fascinating.
Really profound.
Mm-hmm. And so, like Michelle's saying, we customize that for every single person because somebody could have religious trauma. And if there's like a choir singing or, you know,
Maria.
Exactly. Yeah. That could be triggering. So we definitely want to avoid anything that would be triggering. Some people don't like, you know, deep forest, like jungle rhythms and stuff. That brings up something.
Yeah.
So whatever that is for people, that's all negotiated well beforehand, and it's all customized for every single person.
Okay. Okay. I want to make sure I have this clear. So first, what happens is somebody seeks you out, and then they'll have a discovery call with you, and they kind of get to see what you're about. And so if they're proposing, hey, I just want to stop in on Saturday and do this, you're like, no, I don't.
We'll tell them this is what it would work like, you know, yeah, with us. And if that's something, you know, that isn't what you're looking for, there's plenty of other people out there that.
Fine. Yeah, right. It's fine. So then they go through the screening that you've outsourced. And then now it's a go. And mm-hmm. so now it's like, okay, we need to do the prep work and the planning.
Yeah.
And so the prep work includes the dieta, which is more than just, you know, I was thinking of dieta.
That's very common to give someone, especially if it's a true shaman, they'll give someone one of the master plants to do their dieta with, obviously we're not shamans.
We're not shamans.
They're not trying to be a shaman either.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But to teach that, just to share the practice of a reverence, of a reminder that we're not separate from nature, hence why this is like the modality of choice, right?
Yes.
That's exactly right. And so for how, and again, it's customized by the person for themselves, but things we might lovingly point out is like karma inducing food, like flesh foods, you know, foods that harm animals or have those neurochemicals in them, you know, maybe for a week out of their ceremony, if they can, and it's healthy for them, you know, maybe eliminate those and eat some more fruits and vegetables if possible for them. If not, you know, it's okay. We'll work around that. Or eliminating, you know, recreational drugs and alcohol for sure.
Yeah. Social media and news. Violent movies.
Yeah. And so we offer that guidance. And most people don't think about stuff. Like it's their life. I go through McDonald's and I go home and watch the news.
Mm-hmm. Or how are you going to give back? Are you going to volunteer? Are you going to go take a trash bag to the park and, you know, take care of the earth, you know?
Yeah.
And we always tell people if anybody's like on the fence, like, oh, you know, I just don't know. You'll know. Mm-hmm. If you don't know, it's probably not the right time. And we've had people say things like, you know, like one of our clients said, I have all these plants in my house and all of a sudden mushrooms started growing in all my plants. And that's never happened before. And I'm like, they're watching you. They're watching you to make sure that you're worthy of working with them.
Yeah.
You know,
wow.
So things like that really strange things like that start happening.
Those synchronicities start arising for people. They start seeing mushrooms on people's t-shirts or, you know what I mean? It just starts showing up in weird and interesting ways. And our point is pay attention to that, you know, maybe it's your time. We really on a deep level feel that, you know, like Mother Earth and governments and Western society in particular, like we feel like the ancestors and the earth, not to sound too woo-woo, are trying to shake us awake because what we're doing is not working.
It
never has. And we're really almost to the point, to the tipping point of our, you know, self-destruction. So we really feel like Mother Nature, you know, is trying to wake us up and is calling to people, you know, now's the time to heal these wounds that we all have. We're all in this together. We're all doing the work. Nobody's a perfected being here. Like we are all trying to learn to love ourselves and each other in a more wholesome and honest and authentic
way.
Yeah. So we're all really in this together, you know?
Oh, I love that. Mm-hmm. Well, so nothing is too woo-woo for me, just so you know. And I, you know, I had an Akashic reading done recently, and she's an galactic Akashic reader. And she told me that my main guide is Mother Earth.
Oh,
even if that was lip service, I don't care because I took that and ran with it.
I love that.
Yeah, like it's been, and so I've really thought differently since then about like what she's wanting me to do, you know, and what does she want through me? Like how can she work through me kind of thing? So I really like that. I want to share my little story about Combo though. I don't know if you've heard about Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I did a not so fun inoculation ceremony, which is 3 days in a row. And they told me the same thing. You're going to start seeing frogs. I saw frogs on the sidewalk. I had not noticed them before. I just had not. They were everywhere. And I can't really say I want to do that again. I don't want to go. Unless I really feel the call. That is not on my list of fun things to do at all. And so every now and again, I'll see a frog and I'll be like, oh, I hope it's not time for a call. The synchronicities were there for me for sure. So
yeah, that's a great story.
Well, and so you're going through all of this extensive prep work just so this one little aspect of the experience is as conducive as possible for them to open their hearts or accept, find what they're seeking or something like that, and as comfortable as possible, because it can be a really uncomfortable experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Discomfort is sometimes the currency,
for change. Yeah.
It really is sometimes. And we make that really clear to people that, we never know what these journeys are going to look like. And it can be sunshine and rainbows and butterflies and joy. And the next one could be not that, we really don't know. And Dick Schwartz, who kind of came up with internal family systems, they talk about.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah. If you use that.
We're not trained, but yes, we can, help people find exiled parts of themselves, we know enough about it that sometimes we go into their little girl part or, little boy part or whatever. But he says, we always say we're peeling back the layers of the onion. He says he thinks it's more like a garlic pod. We take care of one little pod. And we've done all that work, but then we find another pod. Yeah. And that's kind of true. I think that's what we've seen. You can really take care of your mom stuff. And then all of a sudden you're working with something else over here that has nothing to do with that, right? Okay. So it's not like you're just going deeper into the same thing. You're finding new things to work with, right? Mm-hmm. And discovering all those pods, I kind of like to look at it that way because it's like you said, the work probably is never done. And for those of us who are on this path, that's okay because we continue to grow. Mm-hmm. What's the alternative to sedate ourselves through the rest of our lives? Because it's just, we're not comfortable with it. We don't ever want to look at it. We don't ever want to deal with it. Right. So this is kind of an opportunity. These plants give us this opportunity to look at these things and to really release them and make some really radical changes in the process. Mm-hmm.
One thing I wanted to share about that and about the deep work and the uncomfortableness sometimes is, people watch documentaries on Netflix and they see people going to the rainforest and doing ayahuasca and vomiting their brains out and that whole process. Well, the kind of bandwidth that we operate on, we've never had a person get nauseated or sick. We have them take ginger capsules before, that settles the stomach. And, we've never seen anybody get up and try to run out or anything because we're in that therapeutic zone, mm-hmm. and we really tend to all of those things. But we had a client recently who had come about a year ago and had one of those unicorn and butterfly experiences where everything's connected. It's all love and really had a deep healing place, but that's what she needed. And she came back recently, like I said, after about a year, and she was a completely different person when she came for the second one. Right. Now the second one was much more challenging and brought up some deep stuff, but now she has the tools and the experience, and she's done the work for the last year to integrate that experience and feel that connection. Now the medicine presents, okay, now the work begins. Like, mm-hmm. I got your attention. Yeah. You're reconnected to your sense of self. And now you're ready to, to upscale yourself or up-level yourself, and now let's get to work. And so that's what happens sometimes too.
And that's also why having facilitators that you trust is so important, because we become companions with them, you know, and, you know, this particular person who, you know, had this experience said it really made me realize how disconnected and closed off I am. And Jared said, well, I don't feel that from you. And this person said, well, because I'm not that way with you. I trust you too. So that allyship is really critical. The trust is huge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with me being a end of life doula and him being a chaplain, it's like, we also have learned to companion people through those existential times in their lives. So working with someone in a journey, which can feel like a death sometime, you know, that's a real advantage that we can bring that as well and know exactly how to hold space for those things.
Yeah, well, you can spot an ego death.
Yes.
Yeah, just from, I mean, your background.
That's really right. We don't allow physical deaths during.
I was gonna say, yeah, that one's that ego death is so. Oh my gosh, it's so uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It's so uncomfortable. If I have been reading your applications and I saw all of that, like, okay, you're a death doula. You've done that. This, like, I mean, you have so. You both have so much knowledge and wisdom and deep understanding of just being human. Being human, being a spirit and trapped in a human's body, mm-hmm. that I can't, I'm glad they didn't turn you down. How about that? Yes, I'm glad. And so are the common themes that you are seeing is just that people, they've just lost themselves. They don't have a sense of themselves.
People are just numb. They're numb. They're stuck. It's a lot of heaviness. Mm-hmm. They just feel like they're sludging through life. They've tried chasing after money, chasing after, you know, things, material possessions, or the perfect relationship, or, you know, everything that they were told was going to make them happy. And some people have all of that and they're still miserable. And so they come to us really sometimes desperate, like, I really got to figure this out, you know, because I don't want to go on like this, you know, being in this stuck place. And it's so, as you see, it's so common now.
Yeah.
Stuck is a big word. It's a big word that we hear as an overarching theme is I just feel stuck.
And I feel stuck.
You know, one of the themes that I feel is really, really common today is, you know, we are so disconnected from each other. And we have been hurt in relationship, but that's also where we heal in relationship, right? Yeah. And that can be relationship with ourselves. It could be relationship that we're holding space and we're, you know, in that relationship with you as you do your healing. And really what it comes down to is people really just need to be witnessed. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, what we can offer. The thing that we notice, though, is we know that we all as humans need to be witnessed, whether it's in our sorrow, our grief, our pain, or even our joy, right?
Yeah.
But what we find is when people do this work, very often what we hear is that they don't want to be seen.
Really?
I don't want anyone to see me. I'm scared, you know, or covering their faces or hiding. And so it's a really interesting thing that we know that's what we all need is to be witnessed. And yet we're all so terrified of being
terrified.
Seen. And so, you know, when I think about how this work can help, you know, we have this default mode network in our brain, which is where we ruminate, you know, and it's highly active in people with trauma and PTSD. And what these medicines do is they kind of give that default mode network a break. That's the seat of our ego. So think about that, you know, just giving that a break and realizing, oh, I guess it doesn't hurt to be seen.
Yeah.
You know?
That was just heartbreaking. I was not prepared for you to say that. Because I can remember being a little kid and being like, stop looking at me.
And a lot of times people still go into that as they start to drop in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, it's like,
Don't look at me.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And it's equally true for everyone. But in my experience, you know, I think men are definitely terrified to be open and vulnerable and to be seen, you know, because I think there's so much imposter syndrome going on. That's what I witnessed, you know.
Imposter syndrome with men. There's
definitely
a lot of that.
No. You know, just striving for a bigger vehicle, a bigger paycheck, you know, prestige and esteem. And, you know, like we see that kind of toxicity all over the place now in our leadership, you know, positions and different levels of government. And we just see that insecure, toxic, over type A, you know, and this is really a way for both male and female bodies and those in between. I'm not talking in polarity. I'm talking in generality. Yeah. And, but I really see, you know, male bodied persons really, that's terrifying. That's like a core fear. If they really saw me, you know, they wouldn't love me. If they really could see who I actually was, they wouldn't like me very much. And, you know, Michelle started a women's group about a year ago. I started a sacred men's group here in North Texas a couple of years ago. And I was, even before I sent out the email, I had shared with Michelle, I had this idea that women, at least mirror for me, women are much better at connecting and holding each other than men are, because we're always competing with each other on some level. So I just had this feeling that I would like to reach out to some men that I had met through the yoga community and spiritual communities here in Dallas. And I sent out 10 emails, and within 2 hours, I immediately had 10 yeses. Like, I want to come. I want to gather in a sacred relationship with other men and heal this disconnect that I feel. And so we did that. You know, we passed the talking stick, and which is just a ceremonial way of saying, whoever's holding that stick, they have the mic. And we're going to sit there. And for men, this is a little, I think, particularly challenging. We're not going to fix it. We're not going to offer you advice. We're just going to witness it. We're just going to listen. And, you know, it's very uncomfortable when people are new to the group. But, you know, we've seen a lot of tears. We've seen a lot of really brave people being open and vulnerable, sometimes for the first time in a very long time. So this is the kind of deep healing that can really be sped up doing a journey like this. Mm-hmm. You can make it fast, fun, and easy. You know, it doesn't have to all be suffering. And something you said a minute ago, you were like, we're a spiritual person, you know, trapped in this physical body. And I've said the same thing over the years many times. You know, we're a spiritual being in this bag of bones or in this meat suit, you know. Well, what I've really come to understand, and only in the last couple of years, is we're a spiritual being with this amazing gift to come here and
to get
be
to
here.
Be in a body.
And witness it and just experience it. That's all we have to do.
Yeah.
We don't have to get beat up along the way. It's just experiences, and some of them are very difficult. And I've had my own, like I know you guys have too. But what an opportunity we have while we're in these bodies to experience connection and healing and just the whole thing. It's a miracle. Yeah. Like, life is a miracle.
I've done a couple of like shaman led mushroom journey, you know, the one-on-one experience. Mm-hmm. And one of my reactions the first time was like, I hate being in a body. And I was like annoyed by my body, and I was annoyed that I had to take care of it. I was annoyed that I like had to go to the bathroom, like it was annoying to me to be in this thing. and it's funny, like I've sort of almost done a 180. It's like these days I really love my body. And I mean, I'm not like on a magazine cover or something, but I love being in a body and enjoying food. And like, I don't, whatever it is, a soft blanket. And just like, and my body, it's like my own little teacher. It wants me to know something. And it might be a blemish on my skin or a rash on my leg or the flu or whatever, an illness. Mm-hmm. And I've come to really appreciate this like communication that we have now. this before, I found it to be this annoying hindrance. Mm-hmm. And it like, and it took that ceremony though for me to realize how absurd it was for me to even think that in the first place.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So now it's just like, I'm grateful for that, these experiences that I've had. And I have to say, like, what you guys are doing, this is nothing against my shamans, okay? Because they're good people. But it was not nearly this thorough. Mm. Not nearly this thorough. Mm-hmm. And my understanding also of what you do is like post-ceremony work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So a lot of integration.
Can you speak to that just for a sec?
Yeah. So integration, we typically go a month after, starting with the day or two after their ceremony is their first integration session. And there's assignments throughout prep. There's assignments throughout integration. And you know, one of the things that is really important throughout integration and why it like hurts my heart when I hear about people doing ceremony without integration, yeah, is because, you know, when you're working in these, you know, highly plastic, you know, places, your brain is so neuroplastic and so ripe for change. And you feel really good. You feel like a newborn, like you, yeah, notice things you didn't notice before, right? Yeah. And it feels really great. And especially that, you know, honeymoon period, which lasts 2, sometimes up to 4 weeks afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and then about the 6-week mark is where that feeling, that afterglow kind of starts to fade, right?
Yeah.
And what we have heard from people is that, oh, yeah, you know, I tell people not to go back into another journey for 2 or 3 months. And I'm like, 2 or 3 months? Like, that's when the work begins. Like, yeah, when you start to feel that feeling fade and, mm-hmm, you're like, oh, that feeling is going away, that's your shavasana. Mm-hmm. That's when you lay there and you take what you've learned and you really put it into practice, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that, you know, 6-week to 6-month period should be really, really intentional. You know, and I'm not saying it's going to take a whole lot of, you know, you have to block off your schedule, but you need to be very intentional with that, yeah, you know, period of time afterwards. And we tell people that, you know, it's really not something like, ideally for people to do this work once a year would be amazing. But sometimes people do need it a little more often. And, you know, yeah, there were some studies at the Imperial College of London with treatment-resistant depression and PTSD, where they found that these people who had been treatment resistant and literally living in a dark room, not even able to function, got their life back for about a 6-month period of time. And so that's really important to know, like when they get to that point where they're like back in that dark place, let's avoid that. And if that's once every 6 months,
and that's once every 6 months for that person. Yeah.
Right. But if you're like, oh no, I can function, I just want that feeling again. Well, you know, and then the thing about psilocybin is it's non-addictive. It has absolutely nothing to do with your dopamine receptors. So anybody that thinks, oh, I'm an addict or I'm an alcoholic or I have to stay away from that stuff, it has absolutely nothing to do with addiction. You cannot become addicted to it. And furthermore, there's a post response, non-response. So if you had a journey today and you tried to do it again tomorrow or the next day, nothing would happen.
Right, it wouldn't work.
The other piece that we're finding is especially for people from, you know, a colonizer background, like that come from that heritage of the people, yeah, who colonized other lands. Like,
yeah,
there is a deep DNA disconnect, you know, and we're deeply trying to find, we see indigenous communities and these large extended families, and they gather around the person that's hurt or healing or, you know, needs that. And a lot of us don't have that. We never had that support. And so through these practices, this medicine work, we can learn to rewild ourselves. We can learn to connect with the ancestors of this land, wherever you are, wherever you live. You can Google, find the indigenous tribe that lived here and learn about them and offer a flower to a tree and connect to it and be thankful for your home or where you, your apartment or wherever you're living, and really connect here on this land, because all of us come from thousands of ancestors and they were all rooted in their place for many thousands of years. And we carry that wisdom in our bones. We carry that intelligence and that connection. It's in our very DNA. And we've just been kind of, over the last couple of centuries, we've just been programmed to, you know, just conquer what's around the next corner and, you know, westward expanse. Like that, that's a lot of our ancestors. But through these practices, we're not looking to become indigenous shamans or neo shamans or new age shamans, because it's not necessary. But we just are, we are finding, and for us too, we need that little extra care, a little extra time to process, a little extra time to build trust, to allow people to hold you in sacred space, you know? And so that's another reason that we find that our process, at least as it is today, and we're always open to change and adapt. But
it,
as
might evolve,
it might evolve, in some future way, but right now the extended unit of being held and building trust is a good, it's a good exercise for people.
Mm-hmm. And you're helping people build trust with themselves. Mm-hmm.
First, absolutely. First.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, it's just, I'm, you're really doing like heavenly work here, you know.
Speaking of heavenly work, I would love for Jared to share a little bit about this really amazing study that Roland Griffiths was doing. This is such an amazing, amazing.
Yeah, so we were
glad I used that word.
Yeah. We were actually in Denver almost 2 years ago now at the Psychedelic Science Conference. And Roland Griffiths, who's since passed, he was one of the lead researchers at Johns Hopkins. And they were doing various methods. He was also involved with MAPS and the MDMA studies. But he did a really seminal study in 2006 and then followed it up in 2016 and then another one in 2018. Now, the paper in 2018 hasn't been published yet and we're all eagerly awaiting. But essentially, what they did was they took psychedelically naive clergy from all religions. And I guess they couldn't find a Hindu because they don't normally, a lot of them don't ingest intoxicants, but most of them were Christian because it was done here in the States. There was a Muslim imam and a Zen Buddhist Roshi. And so they basically created a sacred circle of these clergy. And one of them happened to be a Pentecostal, like tent revival sort of a guy.
Okay.
So a few of them were up on the panel and they were just sharing their experience, which were, these people were deep, deep theologians and spiritual seekers, but had never had a mystical experience themselves, which is fascinating.
That is fascinating.
And so it changed and it accentuated what they already knew, but it gave them such a primary experience of what they had been seeking their whole life. It was just beautiful to hear their stories. But for me, coming from, you know, a Pentecostal tradition, which is for me a lot of religious trauma, Dr. Griffiths was explaining that at their first follow-up meeting, they were going around the room and they asked the Pentecostal preacher, "Can you please share with us your experience?" And the preacher sat, I think, quiet for a couple of minutes. And then he finally says, "I saw God, and she said,"
...
And when I heard that, I just had tears running down my face. He got it. And
His final line was, he said, the takeaway was, I know God less.
Having had that experience.
Hi.
Got to experience the mystery, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah, and that experience is accessible to everyone.
To all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I had a little bit of hesitation about ayahuasca. And when I owned the yoga studio, and I owned that for like almost 9 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I remember like around COVID, somebody came into the studio and was just raving about it. Like he really, his life had changed. And he's like, I really want you to try this. You know, it'll make you more compassionate. Like, what? Me? I'm very compassionate. You know, whatever. Go do down dog. And so I was like, I don't need that to be more spiritual. I don't need ayahuasca to be more spiritual. I'm spiritual. I have my path. You know, I meditate. I do A, B, C, and D. And that's all I need. And so I was super resistant to that for a long time until one day I got the wise idea to write my Ayurveda paper, about ayahuasca suitable chikitsa? Because, the way Ayurveda feels about things is everything from the earth is useful if it's used correctly. That's mm-hmm. the caveat. Okay. And so eventually I decided I have to try ayahuasca if I'm going to write this paper. And so I sat with it for like a year just on the thought before I finally was willing to pull the trigger. Mm-hmm. And now I didn't have the same experience that this gentleman did that year. But I remember thinking like, sure, fine, Catherine, there's a slow boat to China. There's a slow boat to China to become, to open up more spiritually and become more loving and become more conscious and become more aware. And some people are going to want to take the slow boat. Mm-hmm. Some people are going to want to get on a catapult and get flung mm-hmm. over, mm-hmm. to China. And there's no one wrong way.
No.
There's no one right way. And we're all going to get there in our own timing. But somebody, when I was just so resistant about it, what she said to me was, but if you had a broken leg, wouldn't you use a crutch to get there? Mm-hmm. Like, wouldn't you use a crutch? And I was like, I would use a crutch. And she's like, this is a crutch for some people. Mm-hmm. And so pick your plant medicine. It doesn't matter. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter. Like whichever one's calling to you. And yeah, it's going to show up. You're going to see a frog on the sidewalk or a mushroom on a t-shirt or whatever it is. Right. But like, I guess maybe one reason why I really wanted to have you guys on the show is for those people that are curious, because mm-hmm. I think there's a ton of really curious people out there, but they're terrified. Mm-hmm. They're terrified of like taking that step. Mm-hmm. And, it's like, what? It's okay. Mm-hmm. Use that crutch. If you're curious, it's probably because there's something in you that wants that's yearning for this healing.
Right.
It's
calling to you. Yeah.
It's inner and healing intelligence.
Give yourself permission to use the crutch, and it's not cheating.
Right.
it's not illegal, or it's not wrong.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to be afraid of. And if they find two loving people like you, who are these perfectly, this balanced masculine and feminine, deeply spiritual, loving people that are extremely well-versed, I can't imagine that many people would say no. And if they do, they need to come visit Auntie Catherine.
I think we all have to, we can't avoid the work right now. We all have work to do. Like,
we do.
We have to step up, and we have to continue to do our own work, whatever that looks like for us. Our individual healing becomes the collective healing, right? And as facilitators, we have the distinct privilege of becoming the practice field for people that, wish to explore that healing. And we've been there. And that's the beauty of it. Sometimes people will say, is what I'm experiencing normal? Yeah.
No, right.
Not only is it normal, it's very common. And we've been there ourselves. Mm-hmm. And, this is very courageous work. Like, it takes great courage to do this work.
And to kind of up level your metaphor with the crutch, what I was thinking is, we all have so much moral injury, trauma, of just being alive on planet Earth. We all have our stuff. And, if you have a rowboat and you're trying to get across the river and it's the bottom of the rowboat is shot full of holes, you can take that oar and you can work really hard and you can get across the river, or you can patch up those holes and just drift and just enjoy the ride, you know? Mm-hmm. So we have to do the deep healing work.
I like that. You know,
just to allow the journey then to unfold without our own grasping and attachment and our whole drama and trauma and the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah, that was definitely an up level to the crutch. Well, you guys, this has been a really enlightening conversation for me. Thank you. Thanks for sharing so much. Because I know there's a vulnerability just to sharing about what you do. And I appreciate you having the courage to be here and just share this really special gift and all the work you've done to be able to provide this. It's tremendous.
Mm. It's really been a lifetime of work, even though it looks like it just manifested in the last, decade.
Yeah.
But it really, honestly, is the privilege of our lifetime to be able to do this.
I love it. Yours is fully in your dharma, I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And so now I suspect that people are going to want to be able to find you. And so did they just ask Auntie Catherine? Is that how we should leave it?
That's great. That's great. Okay. You can give them our email. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. They have to go through my screening process. I'm just kidding. I'll leave it. I'll defer to you.
Yeah. So, that's very kind.
Well, I really appreciate your time and what you're doing for humanity and this planet, and it's just so beautiful. And I'm lucky to know you. I'm also lucky to be a part of your lives in this small way. So
we feel the same
about you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Okay, you guys. Well, this concludes our show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Love to You All. If you're enjoying this show, please share it with someone who you know would benefit. That would mean the world to me. And another fantastic way to support the show is by leaving a positive review and a rating. It just takes a minute. It would make a huge difference. I hope this message reaches as many people as possible. I really appreciate your support. And so until next time, so much love to you all.